Welcome to Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do you really know? And we're going to look at things from a different angle and try and bring things together in a different way. My name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And today we're going to be talking about an album that perhaps gets overlooked. You know, whenever there's some magazine or website that puts together a list of the greatest albums of all time, the Beatles will usually feature. But it's usually the usual suspects of Sgt. Pepper, Revolver, you know, Rubber Soul, Abbey Road. It's never Help or Magical Mystery Tour. Now, on this one, we're going to be talking about the Help album. What is it about an album like Help that doesn't get it onto the list of the greatest of all time? It has Yesterday, isn't that enough? The Help album came out in 1965 and the Magical Mystery Tour album came out in 1967. Let's kind of start with Help. Stephen, do you like the Help album?
I do like the Help album, but it would not be in my list of the top five Beatles albums. And given that they only made 12 albums, I think that tells you all you need to know.
Lower tier Beatles.
Lower tier Beatles is definitely my verdict.
And I know there's a couple of things we're going to go into deeper, but broadly speaking, what are its main failings? Why does it fall down when other albums don't fall down?
For me, I think it's an album that certainly contains a few great songs, but I don't think it hangs together as an album. I think it's a sort of a transitional album. It's overshadowed, in my view, by Rubber Soul that comes immediately after. It's also linked to the film of the same name, which, whilst it was popular at the time, it wasn't critically successful. It's regarded as the lesser of the two films, Hard Day's Night being the first. I think there are some great singles that come immediately after. So I just think it doesn't... It's an album where they're in transition. I think they're moving from the Beatlemania touring days, and you can see the start of the maturing of their songwriting ability, starting to bring albums together as, you know, more thematic quality albums like Rubber Soul. It has a particular sound. Help, I think, suffers because you've got folk, you've got country and western, you've got Ticket to Ride, which is, in Lennon's words, the earliest heavy metal. I'm not sure I agree with that, but it's a mismatch, I think, of different sounds.
I mean, it's interesting. So if you kind of look at the chronology of it, Help is obviously their fifth album. It came out on the 6th of August 1965 in the UK and the 13th of August 1965 in the US. And they're actually two very different albums, the UK and the US one, and we might talk about that a little later. But it is curious that it wasn't their first soundtrack. The first soundtrack was album number 3, A Hard Day's Night, in 64. And I think in the last couple of years, lots of people are happy to place A Hard Day's Night as a number one album or as a top album, even though it's also a soundtrack and it's also suffers from the half movie, half new songs type mix-up that Help has as well.
I think the issue with Hard Day's Night is it's a more consistent sound. It's not the sound of a band in transition. It's a sound of a band in full flight of Beatlemania. It's the first album where all the songs are self-written, and it has a consistency of sound, as well as the fact that the film was hugely successful, critically, commercially. So I think it gets a better press. Personally, I think it's a much, much better album.
Well, it's also a better film.
Better film.
You watched Help as one of your many preparatory steps for discussing these things today.
I did.
What is your coming back to it after many years? Because Help was where you started with the Beatles.
Help, my earliest childhood memory of the Beatles is watching them run along a beach at the end. I don't remember the start of the film, but I remember the end of the film, sitting in front of my parents' black and white television, watching that particular scene. The film holds up quite well, but I think it runs out of steam. I think people might know it's a travelogue where they move from the Alps to the Bahamas. There's scenes set in London. It's very much of its time. It's spoofing the James Bond movies of the time. It does just move the Beatles from set piece to set piece. There's not really much of a plot. But I think if you go back and look at a lot of those films made in the 60s, they don't hold up particularly well.
I think you're right. I think Help, you can tell it's kept afloat by the fact that it's them.
Yeah.
But it does have that kind of cookie-cutter appearance that a lot of 60s pop movies have. And A Hard Day's Night is kind of striking because it doesn't have that. Like, nothing really happens in A Hard Day's Night. It's all about themselves. And Help does have this notion of there's a jewel and it needs to be found, and it's all very kind of...
Yeah, it's a very contrived
yes.
plot. Whereas Hard Day's Night, I think, functions as a sort of mock documentary.
Yeah.
A mockumentary,
if you will. Thanks very much.
but I think people watching it at the time, and even now watching it, you can kid yourself into mm-hmm. believing you're watching a documentary.
Yes.
You know, so for all of the sort of little surrealist touches in A Hard Day's Night, you can pretend it's a documentary. And that movie sort of set in stone
yeah.
the persona of the four Beatles.
Yes.
You know, the quiet one, the intellectual one, the cute one. Help, I think, they don't really know what to do with the Beatles. They're just moving them around.
Yeah.
Plus the fact they were pretty stoned when they were making it. And I think that does come across.
I mean, the first A-side or the first half of the Help album is obviously the seven songs from the movie, which is the same pattern on the Hard yep. Day's Night album. And I think the best thing about the Help album is that we kind of have, for want of a better word, music videos or prototype music videos for those seven songs. There's a lot of songs from that era that I would love to have similar filmed inserts for, or filmed videos for, that we just don't have.
I think that's one of the things that struck me about watching Help again for the first time in maybe 5 or 6 years is those sequences are just simply proto videos.
Yeah, they're all set pieces.
They're all set pieces. The yeah. skiing is probably the most famous one, where they're sort of skiing down a mountain, and you can see that modern pop video starts here, the monkeys start there. It really does set the template for a lot of yeah. what comes after.
And then similarly, the Help B-side is just another seven songs that they recorded in the same sessions. That's certainly in the UK album. Now, the first song recorded for the Help album was Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride.
In February 1965. Do you know what the last time they were in a recording studio before that, what they recorded?
No, but I think you're going to tell me.
I think I am going to tell you. It was, well, they spent a day in the studio in October 1964, and they recorded Honey Don't and a remake of What You're Doing for the Beatles For Sale album. And that's quite a leap in 3 months to go from recording those songs to recording Ticket to Ride, which is a totally different kettle of fish.
Different sound.
Yes.
I think Ticket to Ride is probably the first occasion for me anywhere where I think they're using the studio.
Mm-hmm.
They're applying production tricks. And you're right, it's a huge leap forward in terms of both the songwriting, yeah. the lyrics, and the use of production in the studio.
Was it the drugs, Stephen?
I think it may have been the drugs.
Or the hats.
Or the trousers.
Or the trousers, or any of those things.
I think it was the trousers. Yeah, I think you can't, when looking at the film, looking at the soundtrack, I think you can't discount the fact that their drug use was changing. And there's a very good book by Joe Gooden, where he just traces the films, he traces the albums, and from the perspective of what drugs were they using when they recorded this, and what drugs were they using when they recorded that. And I think Help does mark the transition from alcohol, speed, uppers that they were using in the early part of their career. They've discovered pot. They're smoking it, you know, constantly through the making of the film. The other drug that came into their lives at that stage was acid,
mm-hmm.
Which there seemed to be some discussion as to precisely when John Lennon and George Harrison first took their first acid trip. But as best, the consensus seems to be somewhere around April
mm-hmm.
1965, which would actually place it after they wrote and recorded Ticket to Ride, but immediately prior to Lennon writing Help.
And I know we've talked about this before, so you have your own theories about the differences between Ticket to Ride and Help in terms of that drug influence, for want of a better phrase.
Yes, I mean, the Help, I think, is one of those songs where Lennon suddenly starts writing very clearly about his own personal experience. The lyrics are deeper. It's a more sophisticated vocal arrangement. It seems to me that they're taking much more care with the vocal arrangements, the backing vocals, to serve the meaning of the lyric. What they haven't, I think, quite got in place, and I think this would be my take across a number of songs on the album, they haven't quite matched the music to the lyric. So Help, Lennon famously said this was actually literally a cry for help, although he didn't necessarily know it at the time. It was a much slower song than it ended up. Mm-hmm. And they, under pressure, I think, to have a jaunty opening track, to have a hit single, they sped up the music. It was a little bit more uplifting, much the same way as they'd done originally with Please Please Me on the first album. The music, as it doesn't really seem to me to serve the lyric.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the same with McCartney's song that we might come on to, The Night Before. I think I Need You, Harrison's song. Similarly, so they're still feeling their way towards coming up with that mature style of songwriting where they have a lyric, which is a sophisticated lyric, and they've matched it to the music.
I mean, at this point, Lennon was publishing his books as well. He's trying to kind of mash those worlds into his songs in a way.
That's true. And one of the people that was in Lennon's orbit at the time was Maureen Cleave, who was a journalist. And she supposedly around this time was goading him slightly and saying, why do you only write lyrics that using one syllable words? And he took this very much to heart. So the lyric in Help, I think, is a little bit more sophisticated. You know, there's the phrase self-assured. I mean, that's an odd lyric. Before, it was all I love you, she loves you, I'll buy you a diamond ring, that type of level. This is a more sophisticated lyric. There's a line in Help, I've opened up the doors, and I think the consensus is that that's a reference to the Aldous Huxley book, The Doors of Perception, which is about the acid experience. So he's literally within days of his first acid experience, he's writing this lyric. It's a more self-referential lyric. It's a more honest lyric. Mm. And he's trying to incorporate or bring the style of writing that he had applied to the books. He's trying to bring that into the lyrics. Can't underestimate the influence of Bob Dylan as well.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of looking at the track listing now in front of me, and you see songs like You've Got to Hide Your Love Away, which is almost, you know, Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be Bob Dylan, Away
yes.
I Go. I mean, if you look at those seven songs that make up the soundtrack side, you know, Help, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away, You're Going to Lose That Girl, Ticket to Ride, The Night Before, Another Girl, I Need You. They're all winners, aren't they?
having said this is not in my top five, the first side of this album, with one exception, I think is a very strong contender to being, you know, if it was just the first side, I think I might put it in the top five.
Where's your dip?
Well, I think you know where I'm going with this.
I think you're going with Another Girl.
It's Another Girl.
Which I don't have a problem with. What's your problem with Another Girl?
Oh, it's just Paul at his most Paul.
Yeah. Lines are going to be drawn.
Lines are going to be drawn.
From my Team Paul experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is archetypal. Paul by numbers, it's forgettable. But I suppose...
It's Paul by numbers. It's pastiche.
Right.
And I think this is probably the first example of that pastiche style that McCartney brings to
the second half of the Beatles
career.
Yeah.
And which you know, sustains them in the fallow periods. But I think it is a pastiche. The other aspect being, you know, the cheerleader for Team George that I don't like is that George, having recorded the lead guitar, Paul came in the next day, decided he could do better, just wiped it and put a very odd guitar solo on there, which is neither country nor western, but something in between.
Okay. And those seven songs, obviously, we mentioned earlier on, there's a difference between the UK album and the US album. And in the run-up to coming in and talking about this today, I dug out a copy of the US Help soundtrack, which I bought 30 years ago on a holiday. I'm not sure why, but it kind of remained unloved on a shelf for ages, and I can't recall when I last listened to it. But I have to admit, the US soundtrack, which features just the seven songs and then all the incidental music from the film, is actually rather good.
Mm.
No?
Well,
I mean, it's the problem with those US albums is, yeah, there's all these interludes that aren't the Beatles. But the B-side of the US Help album, I hadn't appreciated. It's stuffed with sitar music. Like, we're talking 6 months before or so,
yep,
before Norwegian Wood. And I hadn't really appreciated until I listened to it last week that there's a bunch of North American Beatle fans were sensitized to the sitar, not from Rubber Soul, but from the B-side of the American version of the Help album.
That is something I hadn't appreciated. I did have a copy of the American Help album on vinyl years ago, which has been lost somewhere along the way. But I did dig out the CD version and I listened to it. And again, it must be the first time I've listened to it, maybe ever, all the way through. And yeah, I was surprised at how much sitar was on the second side. What I don't like is it is incidental music.
Yes.
I mean, it's not...
Good music, it's particularly.
In Hard Day's Night, you had Ringo's theme, yes, which was an instrumental version of This Boy. And here, you just... This is music that could slot into any spy caper.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work without the visuals. And actually, the Indian pieces are probably the most interesting. I'm not sufficiently au fait with Indian music to be able to say whether it's good, yes, bad, or indifferent, or whether it's, you know, a session guitar player having a go on a sitar for the first time. But I was surprised. And you're right. I mean, everyone thinks Norwegian Wood is the introduction to Indian instrumentation.
I mean, the legend goes, obviously, that George met his first sitar on the set of Help.
In the Indian restaurant scene.
And so part of the music that they play on the US soundtrack album is the Indian restaurant scene. But then there's this big sitar chase at the end. I mean, that's a true story. But what I was wondering listening to this was, well, did George have a copy of the US soundtrack album? Was he tuned into the soundtrack itself as opposed to just meeting a sitar in person?
No, I think the way he told it was he picked up the sitar and then went out and got himself one, a very cheap sitar that sort of fell apart. Then he got in touch with the Indian Music Society in London, arranged to take lessons, and it sort of came from there. So I've never read anything or heard an interview where he's mentioned the soundtrack. The other thing I would say, just going back a little bit to the film, it's very un-PC.
Oh, yeah.
Very politically incorrect.
Yeah.
I couldn't recommend it from that point of view. And I think the music as well, this whole idea, this notion of sort of cultural appropriation,
yes,
of music, which is very sort of 21st century, I think if you bring that sensibility to it, you'll hate the film, you'll hate the soundtrack,
yes,
you'll probably hate everything about it.
Well, so to see Rumpel of the Bailey himself kind of done up as an Indian Swami. Yeah, as an Indian Swami, Leo McKern, it's a bit...
called Klang.
Klang. And yeah, and of course they, very prescient though, the god is called Kylie.
Kylie.
So,
yes,
you know, they foresaw Kylie.
They
so
did.
I'll give them marks for that. Yeah, I think here's one of my theories as to why the Help album isn't rated, is that there is such a discrepancy between the US version and the UK version, is that there isn't really an international consensus. Often, if you think of these notions of the greatest Beatles albums of all time, they tend to be albums that were either the same in the US and the UK, which are Sgt. Pepper or The Beatles, Abbey Road, or had a similar comparison. So Rubber Soul was different in the UK and in the US, but they were both good. I think the US Rubber Soul is quite an interesting concoction. And
yes,
I know that might be going off a little bit off topic, but Help, it wasn't really until the CDs came out in the late 80s that there was kind of a unified international version of the Help album.
Yeah, I think there's probably something in that. I think that Revolver is a different configuration.
That's true, yeah.
Rubber Soul is a different configuration.
Yep.
So, but I think it's certainly...
But they have the same identity.
Same sort of identity. But I think certainly in respect of the soundtrack on Help, yes, you're right. Although the flip side is obviously Hard Day's Night,
yeah,
which was also a different configuration in the US, didn't seem to suffer by that.
That's true.
By that, but I suspect a lot of it was to do with the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the critics who tell us what we must like and what we must not like.
Well, we're here to smash.
We're
the critics,
here to smash,
Stephen.
Critics.
Obviously,
we will tell you what to like and not like.
Yeah.
they liked Hard Day's Night. They liked the film. It was a critical success. I actually hadn't realized until I started reading the reviews at the time how badly Help was received, the film.
Really?
Not well received at all. It was seen as just a pastiche of the Bond movies, and you think there were sort of that was what was in vogue. And if you think of all of those 60s films like The Knack and Alfie, and it has a certain tone and a certain style. And like all 60s comedies, it doesn't really have an ending.
Yes.
It just sort of dissolves in a massive fight scene. And I mean, that seems very...
crazy captions.
Yeah, very of its time.
There is an odd thing where even though A Hard Day's Night is a little bit...
Der neue Peugeot 308. Jetzt mit markanter neuer Lichtsignatur. Als Hybrid, Plug-in-Hybrid oder voll elektrisch. Bis zu 450 Kilometer Reichweite. Und mit integriertem ChatGPT-Assistenten.
Hallo, wie kann ich helfen?
Jetzt kommt der Löwe. Der neue Peugeot 308. Ab 239 Euro monatlich leasen, ohne Anzahlung. Jetzt bei deinem Peugeot-Händler informieren.
Older and it's in black and white and has a slightly more post-war vibe. It doesn't feel as dated as Help feels with its kind of modern vending machines and its international travel and all that kind of stuff.
I think that's right. And again, I think the black and white aspect, back to that point, it looks like a documentary.
Yeah. Now, coming back to the album, then, the UK album, the flip side of the album is a bunch of songs that weren't in the movie. And
it's a bunch of something.
Well, I think this is where it perhaps loses some of its cohesion or its kudos as an album. And if we kind of walk through the B-side, it opens with the Ringo song.
The Ringo song?
Which is Act Naturally. Now, personally, I can't stand Ringo singing Act Naturally. Although I think, maybe I'm wrong in this, I think it is the only cover the Beatles recorded and released in their lifetime that actually was of a song that came out after they had released their first record.
That's too complicated for me to work.
Is that okay? That's a bit of gymnastics, bit of mental gymnastics. That's to do. Should I start again or just I'll just move on?
I think we should just move on from that. I'm prepared to take you at your word there.
But I naturally kind of clambers on like a sick horse, and Ringo's doing his full on Ringoism, and it just drives me nuts.
It's a great song.
It's
a great song. Well, I think it's the last song or one of the last songs recorded for the album.
Yes.
It's not a song that they ever played. It never formed part of their live act. It's quite a simple song, but it took them quite a long time to work it out. They ended up sort of rehearsing it in the studio as they were recording it. It's perfect for the film.
But it's not in the film.
No, but it's perfect in the sense that it refers back to Hard Day's Night, that Ringo character, that sort of slightly morose, forlorn, walking along the canal scene. It also absolutely plays to Ringo's strengths as the kind of, you know, ordinary Joe in the band. I think it's a marvelous song. It's a proto country and western, proto Americana.
It is proto Boku of Blues, Ringo country isms and sort of. I would take the proto country of Don't Pass Me By ahead of Act Naturally. I think they're cut from the same cloth.
And Ringo makes no secret of the fact that you know this is country and western was one of his great loves, and I think that the whole country album that he recorded later was simply because he picked a musician up from the airport, flew in from Nashville to work on Harrison's All Things Must Pass. The guy getting in the car, and the whole car is filled with probably 8-track of Buck Owens and that kind of Bakersfield sound. I think it's the Beatles kind of stepping slightly outside what they normally do. I think it's a perfect fit for Ringo, and I won't have a word said against it.
Well, and then as you progress through the B-side, you get It's Only Love, which is a song Lennon hated, which I think is a very nice song. I don't have a problem with it.
That's a nice hat.
No, would you not rate it either?
Well, that's a nice hat.
I know it says fly and girls about go by and all these kind of rhymes.
Yeah, it's
but it's the way he sings it. He can deliver. Like when he hits that chorus and it's Lennon doing it, you think that's fantastic?
I think it's a bit formulaic. I think he's doing a number of things here. He's referring back, I think, explicitly to the mishearing by Dylan of the chorus in I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Oh, yeah.
Which is I Can't Hide, and Dylan heard it as I Get High. Mm. So here he actually uses that I get high when I see you go by. So I think he's making a nod back to
bringing that word in.
But it's an incredibly trite lyric.
Yeah.
What's that like? You know, bright, very bright. He sings it. I
rhyming words with the word itself is always a bit of a
letdown, a giveaway. I disagree with you. I don't think he delivers it well. I think he's self-conscious about the lyric. I also think that this is another example, and not a good example, of them bringing studio trickery to mask what is a slight piece of work.
Yeah.
So they've got the guitar going through the Leslie speaker to create a slightly unusual sound to kind of divert from the fact that this is a pretty lightweight song. And the fact that Lennon actually did refer to the song, the name of the song before it was properly named was "That's a Nice Hat."
Right. And then moving on to, as you progress to that, you Like Me Too Much, which is George being George.
Yeah.
You kind of get to, well.
I'm not going to defend that.
Okay. I kind of like Tell Me What You See because of its groovy electric piano.
No.
But then you get to the nub of the thing, which is I've Just Seen a Face and Yesterday. Buried away at the end of the album on the B-side are two fantastic moments of Paul
magic.
Paul magic, sprinkling his fairy dust all over it.
I agree with you. I couldn't disagree. No one, I think, could disagree about Yesterday. I've Just Seen a Face is a wonderful song, wonderful piece of work. It's a sort of folk-style song. From what I understand, he wrote this some time previously, it had been hanging around as an instrumental. His Auntie Jin liked it very much. So this is the thing with the Beatles. They seem to give songs arbitrary names. So this was originally called Auntie Jin's Theme. He put a lyric to it. The lyric is fantastic. The lyric just tumbles out. Mm-hmm. And if they had moved that to the first side, I think the first, in place of Another Girl, I think the first side would have been flawless. Yes. Absolutely flawless. Can't fault I've Just Seen a Face.
I would love a contemporary clip a la Help to go with I've Just Seen a Face.
Should have been in the film.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it doesn't appear on the American version of Help. Capitol in America, they were so taken with this song that they insisted that it would open the American version of Rubber Soul. So, yes. I mean, it is such a good, strong opening to that.
Like when I was a youngster and I got Wings Over America, I couldn't really figure out why when Paul drops in I've Just Seen a Face, people go crazy. And it wasn't until years later I realised I've Just Seen a Face has a different
level
of recognition.
To me, this is an obscure song from the second side of not one of their great albums, and suddenly it's being rapturously received. But in America, it's the
opening track of Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
And very worthy of it too. And a song that still features with Paul still breaks it out from time to time. He's sung it a lot. He sang it on with Paul Simon on the 40th anniversary Saturday Night Live show.
I buy to your Saturday Night Live.
It's worth digging out on YouTube. It's a very fun and an amusing thing. And then you get on to Yesterday. And sometimes Yesterday is one of the few Beatles songs that almost exists beyond the Beatles. You know what I mean? When I go back and you see these things on BBC4, these nights of old TV clips, it's curious how quickly Yesterday became a standard and kind of started to escape from the Beatles. But what's also interesting, and I remember when I first saw the anthology in 1995, is how Paul is allowed to perform Yesterday completely solo. Like when they go on, was it Thank Your Lucky Stars or whatever they were on? That the other three Beatles step away and Paul stands in the middle. He's not shy at all. And he sings Yesterday, for Paul McCartney, Opportunity Knocks. It's curious that they're confident in each other enough at that stage that doesn't seem to be a problem.
I think that they took a long time to get to that point. McCartney's got this song kicking around for a while. He doesn't quite know what to do with it. He goes to George Martin. Is this a Beatles song? Is this a song? They were writing a lot of songs for other people. I think almost as soon as it was out, Matt Monro was covering it. Marianne Faithfull has covered it. George Martin wanted it to be a Paul McCartney solo record. And I think it was Brian Epstein that was saying absolutely not, because that will sort of break up in the public's mind. You've got to wonder, would Paul probably would have been quite keen to have a solo.
Well, as we said, he's not shy.
He's not shy.
You know?
I think it's hard to be objective about Yesterday because it is so overly familiar.
Yes.
It's just, you just can't, I think, be objective at all about it. Mm. What I think I can say is, I don't think it fits on this album.
Yes, I think you're right.
And I think that contributes to the sense that I was saying earlier of it's a bit of a sort of a rag bag of different styles and different songs. I'm not saying some of the songs aren't great. Yesterday, undeniably a fantastic song. It just doesn't seem to fit. And coming right almost at the end, following I've Just Seen a Face, then you get Yesterday, two acoustic songs, and then you go straight into a rock song, a kind of rock and roll track at the end. It just it's as if they didn't quite know where to put the song, so they just kind of stuck it in,
and obviously
maybe intending it to be the last song on the album.
And Yesterday has a different existence again than in the States. It's the title track of Yesterday and Today. It's released as a single. It's number one. It's a totally different beast. I think it's always worth mentioning for people who don't know that day when the Beatles recorded Yesterday, I've Just Seen a Face and I'm Down were all recorded in the same session when Paul, the best Beatle, obviously,
threw everyone else out of the studio.
It's an extraordinary day's work to get those three songs done.
It is, and I think he was making up for lost time because he hadn't contributed much, I think, to Beatles for Sale. Can't Buy Me Love, I think, was the last single that he'd written. So Lennon was sort of, you know, ahead of him in the songwriting stakes. He was settling into to life with Jane Asher. He moved into her parents' house. And this was a sort of a last catch-up. You know, he never looked back.
And then, as you say, the album finishes with Dizzy Miss Lizzy. And I sometimes feel I kind of blow hot and cold with that as an album closer. Because I feel in some ways, you know, it's not quite ending the way Twist and Shout ended Please Please Me album. It might be going for that. But as you say, this is a transitional album, and this feels like the last shout of the boys from the Cavern Club.
I think that's exactly right. If this had appeared on Please Please Me, it wouldn't have been out of place. And I think that's exactly what it is. The circumstances, I think, for recording it were that Capitol in America needed two more tracks to make up another American configuration of Beatles 6, and they went in on the same day and recorded Dizzy Miss Lizzy and Bad Boy, which are two Larry Williams songs, and they just sort of knocked them off. I always initially thought that must have been the last song they recorded, but actually they recorded them in the middle of the session, gave them to Capitol. They were intended for an American release, and I suspect this is a case of Lennon not wanting the album to end with two Paul songs, but more, you've got to end with an up-tempo rock song. That was a rock and roll song. You've got to kind of leave them with that Twist and Shout style, and I think that carries through into Rubber Soul. And that's a sort of old-fashioned showbiz approach, but you're right, I think it's slightly out of time.
And I think they weren't necessarily obviously thinking of this album as a whole unit just yet, and I don't even think they were thinking of it at Rubber Soul. It just sort of happened with Rubber Soul, almost by accident. I mean, looking at the list of songs, there's, as is my wont, I kind of was fiddling around on Spotify trying to see, is there some way of rejigging the B-side of the Help soundtrack to get something?
You just can't let it be.
I think obviously they wish they'd employed me at the time to make these decisions for them.
Still going for that job.
But there's a bunch of songs that they had in their arsenal at the time that they'd recorded or mostly recorded that they could have dropped in. And that ended up coming out in different ways. There was Wait, which ended up in Rubber Soul. Yes It Is and I'm Down, which ended up as B-sides. If You've Got Trouble, That Means a Lot. And as you say, Bad Boy. So they have 6 songs that they could have added into the other 7 songs to have a decent B-side. Do you think there's anything there that should have made the cut?
I think Wait, which ends up on Rubber Soul, I think that that should have been. I think they could have dropped Dizzy Miss Lizzy. They could have dropped, you know, you would have them drop Act Naturally, I assume. You know, I think it could have been sequenced in a way that perhaps is more, gave a more consistent sound.
Well, thanks for asking. I will tell you how I sequenced it. I've got 2 rough sequences. So this is my B-side of Help. Wait, I've Just Seen a Face, It's Only Love, You Like Me Too Much, Yesterday, Tell Me What You See, Tell Me What You See and Yes It Is. The album finishes on Yes It Is.
I hate that song.
Do you?
Yeah. It's a bit of a downer. You can't close.
Close the album on that. Then my other alternate rundown for the B-side was opening with I'm Down.
Yeah? See what you did there?
Yep. It's Only Love, You Like Me Too Much, Yes It Is, Tell Me What You See, I've Just Seen a Face, and ending on Yesterday.
A lot of Paul there.
And the problem with that is?
Nothing.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing.
But you're not going to buy any of my alternate helps?
I don't.
You notice I've kicked off Act Naturally.
Yeah. No, it's not a proper Beatles album without a Ringo song.
Is it not?
Unless it's Hard Day's Night.
So this notion that, you know, Dizzy Miss Lizzy at the end is kind of the farewell to the first half of the Beatles, you kind of think that this album is the beginning of the end.
I think the seeds of the end are here. I think, I agree, I think Dizzy Miss Lizzy is sort of a relic of their past. I think this is the point at which they start expressing interest in doing different things. So you've got George is picking up on the Indian music. Mm. That progresses extremely rapidly over the course of the next couple of years. Paul is now hooked up with Jane Asher. He's in that London artistic life. He's sort of going to theatre. He's becoming the kind of guy about town, 60s sort of swinging London. John is just going to start sitting at home taking drugs for the next couple of years. Ringo, family man.
Hairdresser.
I think you can see the seeds are there for their separate interests starting to feed through.
Now, before we kind of wrap up talking about Help, I'm going to throw one more theory or bomb into the conversation, which is, I think I prefer Help to Rubber Soul.
And that's a wrap.
So, and I've done this in a very mathematical way, which is I looked at the 14 songs on Help, the 14 songs on Rubber Soul, and I realized I prefer more songs on Help than Rubber Soul. That's kind of how this should work, isn't
it? I would
it?
Expect nothing less.
Right, okay. So I reckon that on the Help album, there are 7 top-class, amazing Beatles songs, and there's only about 5 top-class, amazing Beatles songs on Rubber Soul. So, I mean, Help, you've got Help, you've got Hide Your Love Away, You're Gonna Lose That Girl, Ticket to Ride, Tell Me What You See, I've Just Seen a Face in Yesterday. I think they are 7 top flight songs.
I wouldn't go with Tell Me What You See, but...
Okay. Whereas on Rubber Soul, you only really have In My Life, Norwegian Wood, If I Needed Someone, I'm Looking Through You, and Nowhere Man. I would put them as my top flight songs.
It's for those of you who like to buy your music by the pound.
Yeah.
that's probably the best way to look at it. Whereas I would be coming at it more from the point of view of looking at the whole package. Does this hang together?
Yes.
I think there's a consistency of sound.
Yeah.
Rubber Soul has a very sort of organic sound. It's a kind of, there is an acoustic feeling about it. I always compare it as being, you know, Rubber Soul is made out of wood, Revolver is made out of metal. I would come at it more looking at the whole package. I entirely agree. Help, I think, is a transitional album.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a great album, but I think it has some great songs.
Streets ahead of Beatles for Sale. Let me try one more thing then. I think the bad songs on Rubber Soul are much worse than the bad songs on Help. Well, what do you think the bad songs on Rubber Soul are?
Well, I think the two worst songs on Rubber Soul are What Goes On.
Yes.
Run for Your Life.
Yes.
And coming up a close third is Michelle.
They are the three that I have on my list. So it's a good job that we're agreeing on
something.
We're
agreeing on something.
Because Michelle, even though it's one of the most played and beloved Beatles songs, is a song I cannot abide.
Even your love of Paul.
Even my love of Paul won't transcend my stressful dislike for the love of Michelle. And then What Goes On is probably, it's like they listened to Act Naturally and said, how could we make this a bit worse?
I think that's
how
right.
How could we ruin the opening of Side B on this album?
I think so.
Is how they ended
I think
up.
So.
Well, look, I think hopefully we have made some kind of case for Help. At best, I hope people go away and listen to it again and maybe give it a fair hearing versus some of the other albums. By any other group, it'd be a high watermark. It's just unfortunate that it's by the Beatles in a way.
I think that's absolutely the right.
And it's also worth people seeking out that American version of the Help album and listening to some of the sitar points. Anything else you think that needs to be said?
No, I think that covers it, and I'm glad we reached a consensus on how terrible Michelle is.
Yes, I think if anything, that's an important step going forward. We can
build on that. Exactly,
it's something to build on. Okay, so that's the Help album. Another album cut from the same cloth is the next soundtrack that they did, which is 1967's Magical Mystery Tour. And that's another black sheep in the Beatles album catalogue. Nobody really puts that down as their favourite. So we're going to be talking about that on the next podcast. We would love to get some feedback on what you think about what we've been talking about today. We're on Twitter, @BeatlesPod. So you can drop us a message, drop us a line if you have any suggestions, disagreements, any alternate arguments that you want us to consider. Then we're glad to take those on board. But for Nothing Is Real, my name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And this is Nothing Is Real. We'll see you next time.